Svabharatus-charanam-bhujasavam Jagad-guros-chintayati-nacha-param Dadarsha-deho-hatah-kalmasa-sati Sajya-prajajvala-samadhi-jagmina Sati concentrated all her meditation on the lotus feet of her husband, Lord Shiva, who is the supreme spiritual master of all the world. Thus, she became completely cleansed of all taints of sin and quit her body in a blazing fire by meditation on the fiery elements. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Sati at once thought of the lotus feet of her husband, Lord Shiva, who is one of the three great personalities of Godhead in charge of the management of the material world. And simply by meditating on his lotus feet, she derived such great pleasure that she forgot everything in relation with her body. This pleasure was certainly material because she gave up her body for another body that was also material. But by this example, we can appreciate the devotee's pleasure in concentrating his mind and attention on the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, Vishnu or Krishna. There is such transcendental bliss in simply meditating on the lotus feet of the Lord that one can forget everything but the Lord's transcendental form. This is the perfection of yogic samadhi, or ecstasy. In this verse, it is stated that by such meditation, she became freed from all contamination. What was that contamination? The contamination was her concept of the body derived from daksha, but she forgot that bodily relationship in trance. Om Agyan Timidandasya Yananjana Chalakaya Chakshurum Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Vayam Rupa Atishva Padantikam Bandeham Sri Guru Sri Jutha Padakamala. Very sincerely offer our gratitude for all special souls who have appeared today to participate in this auspicious festival for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who have especially appeared in this humble temple in the illustrious forms of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath. They have appeared to attract our hearts and our minds toward their transcendental loving service. For in such service, we can find real liberation or freedom from the innumerable anxieties of this very complex world of dualities. Today we are reading from the fourth chapter of the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. A very instructive story is being told. Very essential to understand each of these topics of Srimad Bhagavatam. Not only do they conclude in the perfection of our lives, both individually and collectively, in a philosophical manner, also teaches us how to live within this world in such a way that we know what to be aware of, what may create a great stumbling block to our spiritual progress, and how to overcome it. In this story, we find Sati inflicted with such, inflicted with such unbearable pain that she could not even tolerate living. Who was that pain caused by? It was her own father. In this story, we see how two very, very illustrious, powerful, famous personalities are having such a completely different perception of reality. When Daksha entered into this yajna, it is explained he appeared brilliant like the sun. This man was effulgent. He was not an ordinary human being. The son of Lord Brahma, specifically given an instruction directly by Lord Brahma to perform a service that was essential for the progress of this universe. In this yajna, it wasn't like a little yajna where we perform and a few Brahmins come. Indra was there, Vayu was there, Agni was there, Kuvera was there, Marichi, Angira, all these great sages, rishis, Bhrigu Muni, even Brahma and Shiva were present. It was such an important sacrifice. And of everyone there, the chief person who was to be given the honors was Daksha. The name Daksha means one who is very expert. Lord Shiva was in a inferior role to Daksha in regard to material relationships. He was the son-in-law. However, spiritually, Lord Shiva was far in a superior position than Daksha. Daksha, although very great, and he was very learned in the scriptures as a Karmakandi, he was seeing the whole world in relationship to his own consciousness. He was very famous, very wealthy, very powerful, very influential, very religious in terms of religiosity. And very proud. So extremely proud. Because everything we just explained was material. Because it wasn't done in a spirit of detachment for the service and the pleasure of the Lord. So here we have a conflict between material consideration and spiritual consideration. Spiritually, Daksha should have been at the feet of Shiva, praying for mercy. But materially, Lord Shiva would, it is general that a son-in-law will offer respects to the father-in-law. However, Lord Shiva was in trance, meditating on the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu, so he wasn't really very much concerned with who was coming in or out of the room. Daksha came in. Every person there stood up to receive him and glorify him. Except one. Lord Shiva. He was just sitting like this. Now, this is the nature of material consciousness. What would you do if Indra and Vayu, and Kuvera, and Bhrigu Muni, and Marichi, and all the father of Kashyapa Muni, if they all came with folded hands to glorify you and receive you as a special guest with all honors, you would probably feel pretty humbled by that experience. But Daksha, he only saw that Shiva didn't honor him. Therefore, instead of enjoying all the good, he was completely outraged with frustration and anger. And right in front of everyone started blaspheming Lord Shiva. But before blaspheming him, he wanted everyone to know very clearly that what I'm saying is not out of anger, it's not out of any bias, I'm simply speaking the facts of the truth because it must be spoken for the benefit of everybody. But myself, I'm detached. He wanted everyone to understand this was his motive. Then he started terribly screaming against Lord Shiva. This was such a terrible mistake I made to give my daughter to this animalistic creature in marriage. I didn't even want to. Brahma made me do it. Although Lord Shiva has the eyes like a monkey, I married my daughter who has the lotus eyes of a doe. This Lord Shiva, he is so degraded. He associates with ghosts, people who are immersed in the mode of ignorance. He lives at crematoriums. He covers his body with the ashes of crematoriums. He wears skulls and bones as decorations. He doesn't even comb his hair. He doesn't bathe regularly. He's a madman. He's an animal. What Daksha was doing was he was very systematically dehumanizing Lord Shiva. For what purpose? Because he wanted to establish his own position as superior. He had his own agenda. This is common politics in this world. To fulfill our own ambitions, we spread very, very negative propaganda against anyone who we feel who may obstruct our personal desires. And through history, This happens again and again. Examples. In the United States of America, European people came to the New World, as it was called. It was inhabited by American Indians, who, by the way, were named after all of you. They don't call themselves Indians, but they were living there. So many civilizations, living relatively peacefully. And these people were on their way to India, but they ran into this new place, which was discovered, and they wanted to claim proprietorship over it. So in order to reduce the population, they just started spreading massive propaganda that these people were savages. They were man-eaters. They were less than human. They were violent, terrible people. Actually, most of them were very peace-loving people who just wanted to live on their farm and grow food. And by doing this, they were justified in literally mass genocide, extermination of the whole race. They killed tens and millions of them. They would go into their communities and spread smallpox by giving certain government injections which had smallpox, killing millions. Putting them off in deserts, they're not allowed to live or go anywhere else except where nobody else wants to live. They were like prisoners. This was all justified, and the people in general accepted it because of the propaganda against these people. That they were so low and base and dangerous. Similarly, you may not know, but in the Western world, in Christianity, at one time, it was the philosophy that women had no souls. This isn't what Jesus taught, but this is what certain political religious leaders taught. Why? Because people wanted to exploit and abuse women. So this is a justification where you can exploit them and abuse them to your heart's content because they're not really human like men. They're something like men, but not exactly. They couldn't vote. When they brought the black Africans to America, the propaganda was that they were two-thirds human and one-third animal from the jungles. So therefore, to keep them as slaves is a great honor for such subhuman species. They had no rights whatsoever, except whatever their master told them. And the general population accepted it because this was the propaganda. Before World War II, Hitler spread such intensive, systematic propaganda against various minorities and actually convinced young people that these people should be exterminated. They should be wiped off the face of the earth. Similarly, there are some religious leaders today who still claim, what is it called, jihad? That if you in India this was happening. It was propaganda that for every Hindu's head that you bring me, I will give you so much donation, and you will get for every head of a Hindu that you cut off and bring to my palace, you will be one step closer to paradise. Because Allah wants this type of cleaning process. And people were going out and doing it. So this is very dangerous. When people in influential positions have their own agenda, their own materialistic desires to fulfill. And they create a whole propagandic illusion about anything or anyone that's getting in their way. The idea is to get people to hate them, to destroy them. Even the Hare Krishna movement, when Srila Prabhupada came to the West, many people, especially young people, were actually completely miserable, lost. But at least they knew they were lost. The whole world is lost in that sense. So these people who were addicted to intoxication, illicit sex, gambling, meeting, and all kinds of other crazy waste of time, they started becoming pure, moral, religious. But because this was a threat to certain people, there was massive propaganda that this is a cult, a dangerous cult. Nobody knows what a cult is. If you look in the dictionary, cult means a religious system. So that's actually very nice. But the way they use the word cult, it means somebody that's very, very black and wicked and secret and everything like that. So there was actually very much persecution and hatred created. Why? Because people just didn't like people living different. As Srila Prabhupada explained, a society where so much billions upon billions of dollars are invested in the meat industry, in the liquor industry, in the drug industry, intoxicating drugs, in prostitution, in all sorts of other entertainment based on illicit sex, then it's not very economically sound, at least by people's perception, for people to be propagating, giving all these things up. So what to do with them? Gambling is one of the biggest industries in the Western world. You've heard of Las Vegas? How many of you have heard of Las Vegas? Unbelievable. A little town in the middle of a desert, but all over the world, 10,000 miles away, you've all heard of it. Why? Because it's a place of gambling. Most Indians, when they come to America, that's where they go. Because it's so famous. The three most popular places for Indians is Disney World, Niagara Falls, and Las Vegas. So when Srila Prabhupada was teaching, give these things up, it was a threat, especially when people saw that it was actually spreading. So many people were shaving their heads and wearing saris. What will happen to our economy? So how to deal with it? There was no philosophical debates. There was just dehumanization. These people are cultists. These people are evil. These people are strange. These people will brainwash your children. Hare Krishna. Prabhupada said, if their brains are full of stool, why are you so concerned? Let us wash it. Here, Daksha is using this very, very classic, traditional, political ploy to get people to turn against Shiva so that he would be more honored. He had material conceptions, and Lord Shiva is completely a spiritual personality. And who suffered the most through all this? Sati. Because here are two people who are the most influential persons in her whole life. Her father and her husband having a massive conflict. Very, very painful. Very confusing. To apply this to the relative world that we're living in now, most people whose minds are very deranged in societies all over the world are, when they were children, there was either divorce or terrible conflict between the father and the mother. When the father and mother are arguing, when they're showing hatred to each other, or when they separate and divorce, for them, they're just trying to satisfy their own materialistic desires. But the poor child, their mind and hearts are being painfully ripped to pieces. Because here are two people that they have so much love, respect, and influence, are so influenced by. And they're blaspheming each other. They're fighting. They can't even live with each other sometimes. Practically all juvenile delinquency is from children with broken homes or unsettled home life. To take any position of responsibility over another's is a very serious matter. People's lives are at stake. So, in this particular instant, Sati was so traumatized by this whole situation. Actually, if we seriously think about it, the persons who we love the most are the persons who can help us the most or hurt us the most. Those persons who are most dear to us, who are most protecting us, or those persons who we have given so much of our time and energy to show love and service to. Those persons, when they reciprocate with us in a positive way, can give us the greatest satisfaction in life. But also, they could cause us pain and misery worse than anyone else on the planet. Does that make sense? The closer, more intimate and dear you are with someone, the more they can hurt you. That is human nature. If a father or a lover or a best friend turns against you viciously, no one else can hurt your heart like that. So in intimate relationships, there is the greatest potential for satisfaction and suffering. And some people in this world, they have suffered so many times, every time they get close to someone, that they become cold and impersonal to everyone. They can't open up. They'll be polite socially, but beyond a certain point, there's a wall. They won't let you in their life. They won't let you in their heart because they're afraid. Every time they've let anyone in their heart before, they have been betrayed. A large proportion of our population of the world is in this situation. Why is it so difficult to have faith and trust in God brothers, God sisters, or in God Himself? Because so many times, in so many ways, when we have trusted someone, we have been betrayed. So it's very difficult to have trust in someone. And when spiritual people who are influential in our life, when they betray our trust, how devastating that is to our hearts. How difficult it is to recover. So we should all understand what a responsibility there is to be a parent, to be a spiritual leader, to be a teacher, to have any position where you are influencing a person, where you are becoming dear to a person, where you are protecting a person. Daksha was very much attached to his material power. Power is something that is very much essential to achieve anything in this world, materially or spiritually. Because power influences people's lives. World history, it could be seen quite reasonably as just different individuals and groups making alliances with other individuals and groups to achieve and seize power. It's everywhere, throughout the times. Second World War, Japan, Germany, Italy, they hated each other. Each of them thought the other was a subhuman race. They had nothing in common except if they made alliances, they could get power and control the world. And once they control the world, then they'll fight against each other. But that's in the future. Now we should be friends. And if you look at politics in every country, everywhere, just alliances of people somehow or other for whatever reason to come together to seize more power. There's nothing wrong with power, provided we have the right motive. There's different types of power. There's physical power. This is the basest, crudest, most animalistic type of civilization, where people are trying to gain physical power over others. It's also institutional power. Power where we create organizations in order to keep things very nice or to achieve our particular goal. If the motivation of an institution is correct, that power is very important. However, the tendency is, the essence of the purpose of the institution is forgotten or minimized. And a few leaders on the top, their personal desires become the purpose of the institution. And the poor people within it, who they're supposed to be caretakers of, their development is minimized. Then there is emotional power. This type of power affects and influences people's passions, their emotions, their minds. This is very strong in this world. Entertainers, people in sports, they have tremendous power. Some of these entertainers and sports people, when people see them, they faint.
Literally. We have seen with our own eyes some of these singers of America. I don't want to necessarily say their names, but when they would be on stage, it's been happening for years, for generations. They would just, the ladies would just scream and cry and literally fall unconscious. There would have to be all kinds of medical doctors at every performance because they knew that hundreds of people would be unconscious. They weren't pretending, they were actually unconscious. We see when Lord Chaitanya would see Lord Jagannath, he would be unconscious. But this is something else. But that principle is there. You're so much completely emotionally overwhelmed by the power of this person's presence. And such people, the common people, they dress like them, they walk like them, they talk like them, they have their pictures all over their house. And if anybody talks about them, you're willing to just give up everything to go listen. People will stand in line for 20, 30 hours to get a ticket to see them. We went to Tirupati. We saw people standing in a line for 30 hours to see Venkateshwar. But people do the same thing to just watch somebody dance around or somebody hit a ball with a stick. Such power. And what they sing about in their songs or what they talk about in their advertisements actually affects the whole direction of a civilization. Literally. That is power. And then there's academic power. Big scholars. What they decide becomes the accepted truth or knowledge for the whole society. One scholar says that there is no soul. There is just this evolution of species. This book, The Origin of the Species, he came up with an idea. It was really a speculation. And in the introduction, he basically says it's a speculation, but because I did a lot of research, you should accept it. And because other scholars said, yes, this is it. This is where life comes from. It's taught in the schools all over the world. Even here in India, this was a British colony. If you wanted to pass your exams here years ago, you had to write down that this is how it happened. Forget this mythology of Krishna and Brahma and Vishnu. This is the updated version of the truth. So the scholars, they just decide something. And because they have their academic degrees and because they have big, big Maya Purita Jnanam intelligences, their intelligence is very big, stolen by illusion, what they say is accepted as reality. It's power. Then there's intuitive power. People like astrologers or psychics or palmists. They have, especially in some places, they have great power. They tell you, this is the time to do, this is not the time to do. Your whole life is ruled by them. If they really know what they're saying and they have the proper motivations, it's good.
but many do not. Many speak according to what will give them the best income or the best popularity. But they have great power. What was that one? He was like a pseudo-spiritualistic, psychic, astrologer-type person. What was his name? He was Rasputin or something like that. Huh? He was the Tsar of Russia. The Tsar of Russia was the dictator, practically, of the whole nation. And he was just telling them how to do everything. Whatever he said, he would do, because he had so much faith in this person's intuitive power. But later on, it turned out the man was a rogue, a thief, a sinful rascal who was just abusing. He was running the whole country through the Tsar for his own fastidious, sensual purposes. Wherever there is power, there is this tremendous responsibility. Wherever there is power, we could do the greatest good or we could do the greatest damage. The most important, essential of all power is spiritual power. Krishna explains in Gita, everything is emanating from him. All power is coming from him. He is the powerhouse, source of everything. For those who have physical strength, he's the source of that physical strength. He's giving the sun, he's giving the rain, he's giving the nourishment of the food, he's giving you the body, he's giving you every part of your body. Entertainers, athletes, who has so much power over the emotions of people, he's giving it all to them. The academics, he's the source of all knowledge. But when we take what belongs to Krishna and we misuse it for our own particular purposes, that is such a terrible offense to the Lord and to his whole creation. We find that a person that has spiritual power, real spiritual power, is a person who is the most humble. Humility allows the direct access of Lord Sri Krishna's mercy to flow through. A person who is actually humble, an actual sadhu, whatever Krishna gives him, whatever power, whether it be intellectual power, whether it be power over the senses, whether it be influence over others, whether it be wealth, such a person is in such awe of that power because he knows it is not mine. Krishna is the proprietor. And therefore, such a person, if he or she is actually humble, is terribly afraid to misuse it or abuse it. Because the last thing in the entire world a devotee wants to do is abuse that which belongs to the supreme object of his love, Krishna. Thus, a real devotee, everything he or she says, everything he or she does, that devotee is very, very careful to make sure that it will be for the greatest benefit of others. A devotee wants to become Krishna's puppet. This was Srila Prabhupada's power. He just wanted Krishna, as he is, to just manifest through him, to show compassion and love to the suffering humanity. Real humility means to accept the position of Krishna's puppet. I'm not the doer, I'm not the speaker. To have no separate agenda, no separate interest to achieve, to fulfill Krishna's desire in this world. One of the most dangerous phenomena in our world's history is when spiritual people, in the name of God, try to fulfill their own selfish interests. In many ways, that sad situation caused such terrible ruination to this country of India. And not only India, the world. The Supreme Personality of Godhead appears. He establishes truth and a disciplic succession to protect the truth. In the Christian world, people were relatively pious when they followed the Pope. There was only one religion in Christianity in the early days. But then, at a certain point of time, in medieval times, he and his followers or associates became very, very egoistic and exploitative to fulfill their own political purposes. And people were exploited, and gradually they lost their faith, and so many other denominations. There's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of denominations that are all called Protestant. Have you ever heard the word Protestant? Protestant is pronounced a certain way, but actually what it means is Protestant. Every one of these denominations were born in protest to the Catholic Church. And they're all fighting, and none of them will agree on essential spiritual principles. People lost basically their faith in renunciation and true religion. And here in India, the Brahmin class is supposed to be, according to the Shastras, that class of people who live very simple, who live very pure, who know the Vedas and teach the Vedas. That's Brahmin. So people who were in these high positions, who were honored and worshipped by the society, at certain time in our history of this great land, they became very much self-interested. They didn't want to live by the standards of purity, but they wanted the power over others. So they just changed all the teachings of the scriptures according to what they were saying. You had to pay them for pujas, pay them. A Brahmin's not supposed to be paid. A Brahmin does the puja, and whatever donation you give him, he accepts great graciously. But they were saying, you have done this. Oh, you're born of this family. Finished. You have to give me a lot of money to do a lot of pujas if you want to ever have any hope in a future life. This was the rampant. Gradually, they become addicted to eating meat. And there was animal slaughter throughout this land, propagated by the Brahmins. And then Buddha came and said, forget the Brahmins, forget the Vedas, just live peacefully. So this has been a great downfall in the history of the world, when people with spiritual responsibilities are not transparent, humble servants of the Lord and every living entity. A great power is perverted. The power that is meant to bring up pushes down. So a real Vaishnava is very, very much afraid to misuse whatever Krishna gives him, because he's humble. He's actually a servant. It is this mood of service that reveals Krishna. You cannot understand Krishna by any other means. There's a very famous story where Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was visited by the Vice Chancellor of the Hindu Banaras University in Varanasi. That's a very big position, especially in those days of the 1920s. So this person came a long way, all the way from Varanasi, just to meet Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He approached Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati and inquired, please, I have some serious questions about Vedanta philosophy I would like you to answer. So Srila Saraswati Thakur told him, go ask the pujari. This is the vice chancellor of one of the most prestigious colleges in India. He said, I don't think you understand. I don't want to learn about deity worship. I have some serious philosophical questions that I've traveled all this way to ask you. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati said, just go ask the pujari. So he went to the pujari. The pujari said, we have so many vessels that have to be washed. Go wash the Didi's paraphernalia. After you wash, you can polish. This big, big man spent the whole day washing pots and articles of puja. Very menial service. At the end of the day, he was leaving the place, and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati saw him leaving. So he said, so, were your questions answered? And this great scholar was very happy. He said, yes, as I was washing the deity's paraphernalia, all the questions I had were answered from within my heart. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur then explained that you cannot understand the truth. You cannot understand Krishna by any degree of academic scholarship. Academic scholarship is important up to a certain point. For jnana or theory, it is important. But in and of itself, it cannot give realization. But by unmotivated, dedicated, sincere service, Krishna is pleased and he will answer the questions. He will give you realizations. This is very important. Sometimes as we become more learned in Vaishnava philosophy, we start thinking, I know. And then when we think we know, we think other people should serve us. The result is, because they're serving, they're actually getting realizations, but you're getting nothing except false ego. Very dangerous situation. And we've seen practically how big leaders, they know so much, they could present it so nicely. They're accepting so many people serving them, and they think, yes, very nice. I will deliver you. They fall down. And the people humbling serving them, they have all kinds of magnificent realizations. So it is the humble service attitude in all places, at all times, to all people, that will actually attract Krishna to remove the coverings of ignorance from your heart and reveal the truth. No time ever in our spiritual progress should we ever think that I am great, that I am the doer. The best we can be is the humble, instrumental puppet in the hands of the previous acharyas. All rights belong to them. I am just the agent. Prabhupada called himself the postal peon. Peon is the menial worker who does the most menial activities to help everyone else in society. When we have that attitude of humility and the desire to serve, then Krishna gives us actual love. And that love is the supreme power. That is the power directly of Krishna coming through. We read about Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. He wrote the entire Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Several times within this book, he is revealing his heart to the readers that I don't even know what I'm writing. I don't know how I'm writing. He was in his late 90s in age when he began the book. He says, I have rheumatism. In those days, he didn't have dictaphones. He didn't have computers. What did he have? He was in his late 90s. He was carving every letter in palm leaves. If any of you young people had to do that today, your hands would get tired after a few letters. Not easy. And plus, from the physical point of view, he didn't even think he had a very good memory. How good of memory can you have when you're in your late 90s? He's explaining, this is a great wonder, how Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is directly, through the mercy of Rupa and Raghunath, writing this literature through me. I don't know these things. It's just coming through me by their mercy. I'm just puppet. When Lord Chaitanya was speaking to Ramananda Rai, he had the same realizations. You remember at Kovur, those who came to the South Indian Yatra? Srila Ramananda Rai, he was saying to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I don't know any of these things. You're speaking them through me. You want them spoken, so they're coming through my mouth. My tongue is just like a stringed instrument, and you're the musician playing it. Srila Sanatana Goswami in Chaitanya Charitamrita, he explains to Lord Chaitanya, I do not even know how I'm doing the things I'm doing for you, but somehow you're doing it through me. That is Vaishnava. An empiricist
He's very confident. I know what I'm doing, and I know what I've done, and I know what I will do.
But a devotee, Krishna's doing everything. I really don't know how he's doing it. I don't know how he's speaking through me. I don't know how he's acting through me. What does a puppet know? A puppet only knows to just keep that mood of humble service to the puppeteer, and everything auspicious will come about. As civilization becomes more degraded and fallen, power is considered to be how well we can manipulate material things. Is it not? But actual power comes from internal purity and desire. I will not speak much longer, because I can see that you're patiently tolerating me. But let us give a comparison. For the manufacture of goods in this society, we consider it such advanced civilization to have massive technology and industries. Have you ever seen some of the industries? Miles long of these plants with all kinds of multi-billion dollar technology and chimneys and smoke and pollution just to create. Practically everything you have is created directly or indirectly from them. Taking so much oil out of the earth to create plastic, create automobiles, create household appliances, just to fulfill your desires. Now, in the spiritual world, we don't have ugra karma industrial complexes. What do we have? We have kalpa vriksha trees, a desire tree. Just a little tree that's just growing in the ground. But that tree has such power. It has hundreds of billions and trillions and quadrillions and unlimitedly more power than all the power plants, all the atomic power plants, all the nuclear power plants, all the industry of the whole planet Earth. One kalpa vriksha tree. No smoke. You go to that kalpa vriksha tree, anything you desire, it will be immediately fulfilled. If you want a car, a car. But no one wants a car, that's the problem. So that's the difference between spiritual power and material power. The power of the kalpa vriksha tree is in its internal, pure, transparent willingness to serve Krishna. Krishna can make anything happen through that tree. So we're thinking, the bigger we industrialize our nations, the more advanced we become. On a material sense, yes. But actually, real advancement is not that type of power, but the power of transparent purity, self-control, and devotion. Through that, Krishna can manifest himself in every possible way. The residents of Vrindavan had tremendous power. They were just cowherd boys and cowherd girls, Gopa and Gopi. But what was their power? They were so humble
in their desire to serve Krishna and serve one another, that through that, Krishna was all-pervading, protecting everyone, giving ecstatic joy at every minute to every living being in the spiritual world of Vrindavan. So that is the type of power that we want. To the degree we strongly propagate and encourage genuine love and devotion, to that same degree, devotees will be motivated. There will be desires by which Krishna can work through and make impossible things happen. We read in Srimad Bhagavatam how even great, great conquerors of the whole planet are totally controlled by their sex desire. They're conquered by a woman. What is their power? With the power of the six Goswamis, Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, they were conquered directly by Krishna. And therefore nothing in the world could disturb them. So we want to become pure. And by that purity, by that honesty, humility, and desire to serve, to serve the community of Vaishnavas, to serve the community of humanity, to serve the community of all living beings, wonderful things could manifest. Krishna can manifest. In this little temple, actually in India, there are so many deities. There's hundreds and thousands of deities in this country. Why this temple is special? Because hundreds of devotees are really striving with genuine sincerity to show love and devotion toward the deity, toward each other, and really trying to humble themselves to become servants. Because of that mood, the deity is manifesting himself to all people that come in a very wonderful way. We have to learn to be detached. What is real detachment? Real detachment doesn't mean just giving away everything you have. Real detachment means that our consciousness will be consistent whatever we have or do not have. Real detachment means we're not depending on anything and anyone except Krishna. Sometimes we have facilities. Sometimes we don't have facilities. A devotee has the same equilibrium and the same enthusiasm despite what he has or doesn't have. He's simply interested in pleasing Krishna. And he knows that it's the internal desire and the expression of the internal desire that pleases Krishna. Whether we have harmoniums, whether we have temple buildings, whether we have automobiles, whether we have computers, we don't need anything. All we need is the desire to serve. But yukta vairagya means we can use these things, but we're not attached. If we don't have them, we have the same enthusiasm to go on. And if we have them, we'll use them. But we don't claim proprietorship or dependence over them. We understand it's all coming from Krishna. That is detachment. Srila Prabhupada was most expert in this principle. Srila Prabhupada took the best things of the East and connected them to the best things of the West. He didn't take the medium type of things from the East and the West. What did he take from the East? He was not interested in yatamatatapat. He was not interested in the demigod worship. He was not interested in kama mamamsa, kama kanda. He was not interested in impersonalism. He took the essence of Eastern culture and philosophy. What is that? Savai pung sang paro dharamo yato bhaktir hokshaje ahoitiki aprati hatha yayatma supersedati. That the supreme occupation for all humanity can be achieved only through unmotivated, uninterrupted devotional service. Only through this process can one's self, one's soul be satisfied. Srila Prabhupada took the essence of the culture of India, the essence of the scriptures of India, exclusively, and left everything else, pure devotional service. And he connected that to the best things in the West. Not the empiricism and materialism, but whatever could be utilized to access that spiritual principle and propagate it purely in human society, he accepted that. We are all struggling very hard in an environment that is specifically created to make us forget Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada took the best things that could possibly be used for elevating people's consciousness with the essence of Bhagavad Dharma, Sanatan Dharma. That was how he created the marriage of East and West. The best of the West, best of the East. That was his genius. He explained, the East is like a lame man. West is like blind man. East is lame because materially very, very stricken with poverty and suffering. The West is very affluent materially, but spiritually blind. When the lame man with good eyes sits on the back of the blind man with good legs, together they can move forward. Similarly, by taking the virtues of both these cultures, integrating them expertly, we can create a very, very powerful spiritual revival in the whole world. And we can create the environment by which the love and the compassion of Krishna can create unity within our lives and the lives of others. Lord Shiva was this kind of a person. Daksha, he was a different kind of person. He was egoistic, he was proud, but the problem was he was very, very powerful. And he was misusing his power due to envy. And he was thinking that he would get some good result. Well, what was the result? His own beloved daughter suffered so terribly by his behavior. If it was just an ordinary man that would have said something against Lord Shiva, Sati would have probably just walked away.
but because someone so dear to her, so important to her as her father, said it, she could not live anymore in that body. In this verse today, we find Sati is meditating on Lord Shiva with fixed concentration, and she awakens the fire element, and she becomes Sati. Her body is finished. And then we find how Lord Shiva, he becomes very angry that he was not the slightest angry with Daksha when Daksha was blaspheming him and trying to ruin his reputation in the whole, in every planetary system of the universe. He just, Hare Krishna, but the dogs will bark, the caravan of my devotional service will go on. What do I care? But when he caused pain to Sati, that he understood this man must be punished. So he created this Birbhadra. He was a very special type of personality. He came into that Daksha Yagya where you, and he just created havoc. Ultimately, he took Daksha, and with the same device that was meant to cut off the head of a goat, he cut off Daksha's head, and then he put goat head on it. This was the best thing that ever happened to Daksha. Because Daksha was, we already have read how beautiful he was. He was actually beautiful. Nobody's beautiful today. This was Satya Yuga. He was beautiful. And even amongst people of Satya Yuga, even the demigods were attracted by his effulgent beauty and offering their obeisances. He was proud of his beauty. And now he had the head of a goat. How many people are attracted to goats? One of the animals that we don't read about in the scriptures in comparison. We read about eyes like a doe, or dances like a peacock, but we don't read much about goats. Horses are considered beautiful, cows are considered beautiful. Now Daksha had goat head. He had nothing to be proud of. When he looked in the mirror, what did he see? Can you imagine how embarrassing that must be? Some of us are embarrassed when our tilak is crooked. Or ladies are embarrassed if their hair is not nice. Ladies, would you be embarrassed coming to the Sunday program with a goat's head? And you're humble Vaishnavis. What to speak of a proud person like Daksha? So very, very embarrassing situation. Essentially, everything was taken away from him. In that condition, Daksha actually became very humble. And he prayed for Lord Shiva to forgive him. That actually you are a great personality. It is my envy. It is my pride that I said these words, and I deserve this goat's head. I deserve worse. Thank you. And he became very much purified through this experience. And Lord Shiva forgave him. And Lord Vishnu came and told Daksha, don't offend Vaishnavas anymore. So it's a very important story. All of our material power and prosperity, the end, the best we'll have is a head of a goat. Everything we have discussed in this material world, whatever you want by your material pursuits, you'll get the opposite in due course of time. It's the law of nature. You cannot change the laws of nature. So better that we work together in a spirit of humility and devotion. To be nice, humble instruments to serve in the mood of the servant of the servant of the servant. The congregational chanting of the holy names is the means by which we can unite to purify our hearts and to purify the whole world. So let us very sincerely chant Hare Krishna and be happy. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.